Sometimes you gotta go back to actually move forward. I don't mean all the way back to dental school. Let's face it, that was an awful experience. But when it's all said and done, you still have questions. That's what Paul and Justin are here for. To answer your questions as your dental business mentors.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Justin Borum here with Paul Etchison, my partner and good friend. We are here as your dental business mentors. We got a great question today that gets circulated a lot if you're on Facebook communities, different dental entrepreneur type sites, practice management stuff. You're going to hear these two words a lot. So I'm glad somebody submitted the question. So Paul, what was the question?
So I like this question a lot because a lot of people don't know what this is even. And the question was, what is EBITDA? But I think a better question would be is like, what is EBITDA and why the hell does it matter in a dental practice? So I'm just going to throw that to you, Justin. What the heck is EBITDA? Why does it matter?
EBITDA is effectively profit in your practice, but it stands for earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization. So revenue comes in, expenses go out. And when we talk about interest, tax, and depreciation and amortization, so let's break those up. So interest, it really depends on whether you have loans, what your interest rate is. Tax differs for everybody. So, you know, you may pay one tax rate, I may pay another, depending on the sophistication of our tax planning strategies, etc. Amortization is the debt that you're servicing over time. And how quickly are you paying that down? And how is that profit being allocated to pay down debt? And then your depreciation is an accounting term used to basically say, here's your assets today. This is what your dental clinic has as assets and they're worth said value. But hey, this year they went down in value. So then that goes and helps you save some tax on an annual basis. So that's the basic premise of EBITDA. And it's a more comprehensive term than profit because what EBITDA, where it's relevant is, if anyone's coming to buy your practice at some point in time, that's the number they want. And here's why. So if we just look at revenue in minus expenses equals profit, that number alone doesn't give us the true picture of profit because when we start adding back depreciation, adding back interest and tax and amortization, and we start adding back and normalizing expenses that, hey, me as the buyer, whether I'm a DSO or a third party or some private equity firm, I'm going to start adding back and adjusting this true profit to get a real depiction of what is the cash flow when I buy this thing. And so in that process, they're going to then decide what multiple of EBITDA they're going to pay you on. Now, we're not going to get into some of the other reasons why they pay you more or less, like development of platforms, predictability of revenue, etc. But the important thing for you to know is EBITDA is an important number to track over time. Mainly, your net profit is an important number to track over time so that you know that you have cash left over. And when a buyer looks at this thing, it's going to be attractive. You don't want to be tied to your practice forever. As well, you're spending a lot of time and energy growing this practice. The last thing you want to do is be left with an asset at the end of 10 or 15 years that nobody really wants. And so I think thinking and beginning with the end in mind is important, and the understanding of EBITDA is key. Now, I'll just say one more thing, Paul, and that's your profit and loss statement, or your P&L. We won't get into balance sheets or cash flow statements, but your P&L, it's simply put, is money in, money out, what's left. And your P&L is what they use to take a look at these things. So we can dive into P&Ls a little bit because that's going to be important. But yeah, what are your thoughts there, Paul?
Well, my thoughts is what EBITDA for me is essentially, it's if I'm a solo practice owner, okay, and I'm the only practicing dentist. If I took my production and I paid myself a reasonable rate for my production, for most places, 30% of your production, and then I said, what do I take home additional to that? That would be the EBITDA, but you've got to take in your loan payments as well and anything that you're paying out on, because it's essentially the way I see EBITDA is just taxable income. And this is something that I had to get really kind of crystal clear on with my sale recently to MB2 because they bought my practice on a multiple of my EBITDA. And what I see a lot of times with when I talk to other dentists, and a lot of dentists don't know what their EBITDA is, but what you will realize is that when you're producing maybe like, say, let's say the $700K a year office, that's pretty average. Your EBITDA is going to be pretty small. Like what you're going to take home as a dentist is going to be largely very similar to that 30% of production. But once you start growing and using these economies of scale, you start getting associates in there, then that EBITDA gets a little bit larger. And this was a realization I had maybe 3 years ago when I started realizing that I was making more money owning the practice than I was producing dentistry. And that's kind of what helped fuel me start taking myself out of the chair to say, hey, I want to grow this practice. I want to grow revenue more. And I think this is something that we should probably touch on, Justin, is that a lot of people, like, they want to grow their EBITDA, grow their profit by, you know, penny pinching on gauze, where it's really should be, you should be growing the practice and growing the revenue and expanding hygiene and adding providers. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I appreciate you bringing up the recent practice transition that you're going through, because it's super relevant, right? Like, if it wasn't relevant before, it's relevant now. And obviously, Paul, you've paid close attention to your profit. Otherwise, you wouldn't be an acquisition target. So, which speaks to the sophistication with which you ran things and your understanding of this stuff. And this is what we want, really. This is where we want everyone to be. You know, this is where I'd like all dentists to be, because I think everyone should benefit from their sweat equity and hard work over the years. So let's take a step back. There's two ways to become more profitable: lower expenses or increase revenue, so the money left over at the end of the day is greater. Okay. And the floor on decreasing expenses, particularly if you're one office or even like 10 or less, it's very challenging. Unless you're part of some sort of buying group or you're going out there to figure out ways to collaborate with larger groups that are now have more purchasing power, which you should consider. Generally, one-on-one, your reps don't have much pull. They can't really lower fees on supplies and all sorts of things very much. So the floor is hit much more quickly than the ceiling on top-end revenue. So I always tell everyone, if you want to become more profitable, yes, you should start paying attention to the P&L. We'll talk about the key areas in a moment. But you should also be really acutely focused on, number one, the practice or the drivers for practice growth. Okay, so the main drivers that are going to increase your productivity are your key metrics. Number one, how many patients are you seeing? Number two, what is your collection percentage? Like, if it's not 97% plus, profits just, that's all slipping out the back door. So, and then we're looking at an average diagnosis per new patient. Now, this doesn't mean your whole goal is to overdiagnose. That's not at all what we're saying here. The goal is to just become a more comprehensive treatment planner through education, courses, and programs, so that the average diagnosis per patient does go up. To me, I just see that as more value for the patient. So the more value you deliver, the more that number increases, and the better the benefit to the patient and the practice, of course. So the third is your treatment acceptance rate. The fourth is your same day treatment percentage. And I'll touch on that for a sec, because doing treatment same day is cheaper than doing it and rebooking it back for another day. So it's important to consider that, especially when you start factoring in what your average expenses per hour are in the practice. Not necessarily saying you have to be neurotic and go do that, but the bottom line is you have fixed expenses and variable expenses in your practice. And if you're looking at some of those wages and other expenses associated with operations, you're better off doing treatment right on the spot than you are trying to complicate it and moving people back. Now, that's not always feasible, but it's important to build systems for that. The last two relate to front end, which is how often is the phone answered? So call answer rate, and then call conversion rate. So how many end up as patients in the chair that you can deliver value to? So I know that's a lot, and if anyone's writing this down, you're probably scribbling it down, so go back and listen to it in 0.75 times or something, but get those numbers down, because...
I was writing it down, yeah, right here.
So we want people to understand that if you're focused on those numbers, then what you're going to find is your revenue starts to increase. You're becoming much more resourceful, less dependent on more patient influx, and you're doing more for the people that are there. And that allows you to build a more productive practice. You're going to start to see that ascend. As that happens, you will also see that on your profit and loss statement, some of these key areas that I'll get into in a moment will start to look better. Okay. So before I jump into the P&L stuff, Paul, I want to turn it over to you. You know, what are your thoughts there? And do you have any different views?
Well, you're a big numbers guy and more so than me. And sometimes when I hear you speak, I feel bad that I'm not more enveloped in the numbers. I'm just I never dive into stuff to the level that you do. I respect you for it. For me, like as far as the measures that are going to drive growth, I'm mostly just metrics for me is payroll percentage. Like that's on my P&L. That's my big one. And then it's just, are we producing and collecting enough to cover that payroll? That's like literally all I do. And everything else just kind of falls into place. I'd like to like tell listeners that I'm just big, like crunching the numbers and doing all these little things. I just don't. And I think it's like laziness, and it's maybe it's not laziness, but it's like, it's not my zone of excellence to say. It's just somewhere I don't like to go. But yeah, that would be all I have to add about that is I like to look at 25% payroll. Is my payroll, are we producing and collecting enough for me to be at 25% payroll? And that's like the big thing on my profit and loss that I care about.
Yeah, 100%. And it's the main one. You know, if you can be at 25%, and this, just so we're clear here, guys, when we're talking about that percentage, we're looking at it as a percentage of adjusted production or adjusted collections. It depends on how your accountants decide to report that. Your P&Ls should ideally, they're either done on a cash basis or an accrual basis. It should be an accrual basis, ideally, in my opinion, and the experts we deal with. So when we look at our P&Ls and we see that 25% of that productivity or that collections is said revenue, well, that's what you're paying your team. That should include bonuses, rewards, contributions to any benefit plans or that sort of stuff, as well as their base pay, all inclusive in that. And it's not just their hourly wage or their salary. So that's a key point to understand. Now, a lot of folks, I'm in the same boat, as we don't mind seeing that go up to 30 sometimes. And the reason why we're okay with that is because we feel that the team is definitely deserving of it. And we want to make sure that we're able to recruit the best team members, and we're never going to lose anybody over a dollar to the neighbor, right? A lot part of it is culture, but compensation and culture are heavily tied, in my opinion. So let's just quickly go through so we're not boring you guys too much with the numbers. I'm going to rattle some things off, so get ready. Number one, on your P&L, look at your staff
wages. Get your
wages.
Pens out. Here we go.
Yeah, staff wages, 25 to 30%. You want to look at your lab. You want your lab. People are going to argue with me here, but ideally as low as possible. You know, if you can get your lab to 5% and still be highly productive with restorative type treatment, like major treatment, great. Just the lower the better. Anywhere between 5 to 8%, generally, I'm not going to get my head bitten off by some third party. So the sundries you want, or supplies, consumable items, you want those to be at 5% or less. You know, in a perfect world, you could be at 3 to 4. Office supplies, 1% or less. Marketing, depending on where you are in your growth phase, it could be anywhere between 2 to 10% if you're beginning and you don't have much revenue. But as you grow and stabilize, you can keep that at 5% or under. So these are some of the areas that you want to continue to look at. Staff wages, sundries, lab, office supplies, marketing expenses. And then you just start going down the list. Every month you should be getting this from your accountant or your bookkeeper, and just going down the list and circling the areas that just seem to be outliers for you. Okay. That's an important process. Now, remember, you're not going to be able to lower the floor much in the beginning, especially if you're reinvesting into top-end growth of the practice. You're going to spend more on marketing, more on staff expenses. You're going to be developing systems in the practice. So look at this as sort of a long-term plan. And phase one is top-end revenue. Along the way, lower the key expenses and then continue to dial in as revenue goes up and you start to have more profit. Now tighten up there and start to get dialed into the profit aspect of the practice. So I hope that helps you guys. If not, hit us up with questions. I would be happy to help.
Yeah, and I would just add one more thing that a lot of people, and I went through this too with my first accountant when my practice was pretty small, is I wasn't getting, the bookkeeping wasn't happening once a month. I wasn't getting a report. I wasn't able to do a profit and loss and like look at how these percentages of expenses have changed year over year. So this is valuable information. It's not everything, but it's super, super, super important that we know what our expenses are. So we're coming up on time here. We're just gonna cut that one off, Justin. So send our questions in info@dentalbusinessmentor.com. Take care.